Hey, it's Luke Black, proud owner of The Marketplace. Since 1980, we've been your neighborhood sandwich shop. We're open Monday through Saturday for breakfast and lunch. If you're craving a fresh sandwich, salad, soup, or a hot cup of local roasted coffee, we've got it all made fresh daily. The Marketplace can cater your next event from small office lunches to full wedding parties. You can rent our space for private gatherings after hours. You can find The Marketplace at 246 Olmsted Boulevard in Pinehurst. It's not just a sandwich, it's an experience.
This is Taking Aim, a weekly show hosted by David Hensley and Stephen Woodward. Join us for open season on hypocrisy, deception, woke culture, and uniparty cronies. We'll review the stories you might have missed and prepare you for what's to come in the week ahead. Taking Aim starts right now.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to your favorite Saturday morning show. Here exclusively on WEEB, where we are taking aim on a target-rich environment each and every week. I'm Steve Woodward, joined, as always, by David Hensley. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Steve. Good morning, everyone.
Well, we're a little exhausted because show prep has been quite extensive this week, but we're going to try to make our way through it with maximum energy and clarity. And knock a few of these right out of the old ball yard, as they say. I would be remiss if I did not add that we are delighted that we now have a title sponsor for this program. It is the Marketplace Restaurant and Catering. And our friend Luke Black in Pinehurst, off of Highway 211, a great place to visit for breakfast and lunch. We highly recommend it. It has also been the site over the years of many gatherings of speakers and a meeting place for those of us who are, not going to take it anymore.
People of traditional values have had many meetings there. I look forward to resuming that tradition, actually.
Yes, it is the ultimate We the People destination.
Yes, and not these fake No Kings, We the People. Do you see they're trying to usurp the We the People?
Yeah.
Yeah, they can do nothing but copy. Copy and lie is what the left does.
After watching that farce last weekend, I think the new name for the organization is officially No Brains, because that was my takeaway. Anyway, we have got stuff to talk about, and let's get right to it, shall we? Let me add that later in the program, we will be joined by Don Brown. I want you to get used to hearing that name, because Don Brown... A retired military officer will soon be Tom Tillis's primary opponent for the U.S. Senate in 2026. And we're going to talk to Don later in the program about his strategy for unseating the mega rhino that is Tom Tillis.
I cannot wait.
So that's going to be very interesting to hear what he has to say. You know, I have to say that one of the highlights of the week for me, and I'm sure for millions of Americans.
Is this from the heart? Is this like going to be a heartfelt admission, or do you have like heartburn?
No, yes, I'm having a massive chest pain. No, I'm just kidding. but it was great to see for once an episode of The View on ABC in which the ladies of The View, mainly Whoopi and Joy, who are neither
right.
joyful or making Whoopi, they were left in stunned silence because Arnold Schwarzenegger showed up, the well-known actor and former governor of California, and quite a celebrated legal immigrant to this country in his youth as a bodybuilder and then later an actor. Arnold came on, and I guess the ladies of The View thought that he was going to pile on with how all this crackdown, as the media calls it, on immigration is such a terrible thing, and that we're sending people who are here undocumented illegally, we're sending them back where they came from. I guess they expected Arnold to join in the chorus.
Well, so that's the other surprising thing about this is why would they not? I mean, Schwarzenegger's been a reliable squish. I mean, he's been a reliable uniparty, you know, McCain-esque, you know, not a conservative. That's part of this news, too, is Schwarzenegger may have come out of the closet.
And you'll recall during the pandemic, he looked into a camera on one occasion and dropped a big F-bomb, referencing the fact that people did not have freedom during the pandemic. And he wanted them to reinforce that with the big F-bomb. But on this occasion, it was an entirely different, almost cuddly, lovable Arnold. Play clip one.
I just think the world of the great kind of a history that we have with immigrants in America. But the key thing also is at the same time that we got to do things legal. That is the important thing, you know. So you got to do things legal. And those people that are doing illegal things in America and that are foreigners, they are not smart. Because when you come to America, you're a guest. And you have to behave like a guest. Like when I go to someone's house, and I'm a guest, then I will do everything I can to keep things clean and to make my bed and to do everything that is the right thing to do rather than committing a crime or being abusive or something like that. So that doesn't really work in this country. So I think the important thing is when you become an immigrant to think about, okay, I go to America because I want to use America for the great opportunities that America has in education, in jobs, creating a family, all of those kind of things. Then you have to think about, okay, if I get all of those things from America, then I have to give something back. You have a responsibility as an immigrant give back to America and to pay back to America and to go and do something for your community for no money whatsoever. Give something back to after-school programs, Special Olympics, or whatever it is. Make this country a better place.
Did you see what he did? He used the R word. Responsibility. Mm-hmm. I'm surprised that the witches there didn't spontaneously combust when he used the R responsibility word.
And did you notice how many times one or more of them was trying to cut him off or break in?
Yeah.
And he wasn't having it.
Right.
It was a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
And of course he's absolutely right, and it's the most common sense thing in the world. And especially when you consider that so many of these who are being detained and deported are not here to build a family and a life. They're here to end your life and build a world of chaos for themselves and heaped on top of crime and looting and burning and all that good stuff. Now, here's somebody else who needs a lesson in how to behave, as Arnold mentioned. That would be... none other than California Senator Padilla, who was, you may have noted, barged in on a press conference in Los Angeles being hosted by Department of Homeland Security Director Kristi Noem, barged in, tried to make the press conference about himself, and nobody knew who he was, even though he thought everybody knew who he was.
Look at me.
The U.S. senator
No one knows. I didn't know who he was. And think about that. He's the senior senator from California. Yeah. And no one even knows who he is, the senior senator from California.
And the only reason we know who Adam Schiff is because he's such a corrupt scumbag that, you know, his name is quite widely known, but not Mr. Padilla. So he shows up at this press conference, gets dragged out of there by everything but his toenails, and makes a big scene about it, and then flies back to Washington and goes to the floor of the Senate and delivers this emotional speech about how terrible it was to be so mistreated in his own country. Well, who had to get in on this? Mr. Microphone, Mr. Soundbite, North Carolina's very own senator, who we do know who he is for mainly the wrong reasons,
yeah.
Tom Tillis.
Thom Tillis. Thom Tillis.
He wanted to try to talk out of both sides of his mouth, which he's really good at. And he gave us Exhibit A of that. Play clip two.
On this floor yesterday while Senator Padilla was speaking, And I have to tell you that the events that occurred, and I'm saying this because now I hear about a dust up in New York. Folks, Alex Padilla, I consider a friend. And I believe that he was very, very, his emotions were on at a 10 because of some of the things that he's seen occurring in terms of ICE detention, ICE raids. I agree and disagree with him on some of the policy. But folks, we've got to get to a point where elected officials have to take some responsibility for their actions. And we have press conferences here all the time. We have press conference, a daily, a weekly press conference out here with leadership. We've got a press room on the third floor. I wonder if we're actually saying it's okay for me to run out here and interrupt Senator Schumer while he's giving his opening statements to a presser to ask him a question. I think that that's inappropriate. I think it would be inappropriate to do it to my Democrat colleagues up in the press room on the third floor. I think it would be inappropriate for me to go out and do that out in the field. So I guess what I'm trying to say here is, why don't both sides own up to the fact that they both own some responsibility for what happened there?
By the way, the quote-unquote dust-up Tillis referred to in New York was actually quite a blatant act by the comptroller of New York, who's also, I believe, a candidate for mayor, maybe. This guy is in a federal building in New York City trying to obstruct the detainment of a illegal immigrant. So hardly a dust-up, more of a staged act of defiance. So, again, Mr. Tillis downplays that. And also, he mentioned the emotions of Senator Padilla being at a 10 due to the deportations that he was seeing in Los Angeles. Well, sorry, I would hope that a U.S. senator would be cheering on the Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents who are removing these criminals from our country and who have been terrorizing the streets of Los Angeles to the point where multiple businesses across multiple blocks are boarded up and at risk of maybe going out of business. That's what has him tearing up. I don't get it.
You know, just like when that dude from New Jersey, you know, I am Spartacus, right?
Yeah. He had Cory Booker.
Cory Booker had his I am Spartacus moment. This was Tillis trying to do the same thing. He was trying to come out and be the great, oh, I'm above this. I can triangulate between two of them. But it was all so fake and so contrived. I mean, why was he even speaking? What could have possibly been the topic that he, like, no, he went to the floor just to say this so he would be the great triangulator. This guy, the more and more Tillis speaks, the more I'm convinced he's not running. He's just doing a feint to act like he's running for senator. Because this dude, the more he talks, he wouldn't be able to be elected like the state dog catcher.
Well, unfortunately, we've done it before. We've elected him before. There was an interesting piece that I read this week from Andrew Dunn, who's one of the keen political observers in the state in terms of independent journalists. He thinks that Attorney General Jeff Jackson is going to be the potential Democrat candidate for U.S. Senate, not former Governor Roy Cooper. And he stated a number of reasons, mainly that Cooper has continues to remain silent about his intentions, and he reads into that Cooper ultimately is going to decline to run for Senate. We'll see how that goes. But, you know, it was just a week of elected officials acting really badly, I have to say.
You know who I think would be a great senatorial candidate for the North Carolina Democrats?
Do tell.
Rolly Sampson.
Oh, Moore County's very own.
Yes.
Really?
You know, I am Spartacus. You know, Moore County's own I am Spartacus,
right,
and former military liaison to Moore County Schools and failed school board candidate.
Yes. So all the credentials to be a Democrat rock star.
Yes.
Yeah, well.
Should be moving right up there.
I'm glad you brought that up. That's interesting. We'll have to ponder on that in the weeks ahead, I think. But it was a week of elected, mostly Democrats, behaving badly. We have the case of Julie Von Hafen.
Oh, yes. That is AKA North Carolina's Bucktooth Uber Karen.
She has shot to the top of the list.
Yeah, she is North. If you look at a picture of her, man, she could be Bucky's mascot. She is she is North Carolina's Bucktooth Uber Karen from Wake County.
Wow, yeah. So not only an ideological train wreck, but a dental train wreck as well, apparently.
Yes.
Well, in case you missed her little antic, and I don't know how you could have, but we'll fill you in anyway. She attends naturally. She's a Democrat from Wake County, elected to the state house, District 36. She, of course, can't contain herself. She has to attend one of these no brains, no kings protests. She goes to the one, I think, near the courthouse in downtown Raleigh. And she has her little iPhone out, and she sees a woman, and it just thrills her to see this woman, and she has to capture a photo of it. The woman is carrying a horizontal pole, and on either end of the pole are two decapitated scalps. One is clearly Donald Trump.
Right.
The other one, there's been a debate as to whether it's his executive senior advisor, Stephen Miller, or if it's Elon Musk. It's hard to tell. Whoever it is has also been adorned with a swastika just to, you know, add injury to
wait,
insult.
Wait. There a swastika appeared?
Yeah.
So where was Moore County's Peace, Love, and Justice Coalition to condemn that?
I haven't heard from them.
Because, you know, when a swastika was painted or a swastika banner was hung from a bridge, you know, the Peace, Love, and Justice Coalition jumped into action and condemned it. But, you know, when a swastika appears at a No Kings rally, they're oddly silent.
Not only that, but they were celebrating it. So, and in the middle of this horizontal bar that this woman was carrying about is a banner. Depicting an image of a French guillotine, which, of course, as we know, has only one use, which is to separate a person's head from his body.
Oh, wait. Well, in between that, I use mine for cutting fine French cheese.
Well, that's good. Or maybe preparing some beef brisket or something.
Sure.
You got to get the fat off of it.
Right. I mean, look, the thing shouldn't just sit idle in between executions.
No, you pay good money for a thing, you know.
Right.
Anyway, she's got the banner with the guillotine. I don't know who this woman is or was. And then the banner reads, "During difficult times, some cuts may be needed." So Representative Von Hafen captures this image with her phone, and it's not enough for her to run around and show all of her Democrat friends, look at this, isn't this great? Trump decapitated,
You know,
wouldn't that be great if that really happened? Yeah, it's not enough for her to do that. She has to post it to Facebook, okay? And like all these idiots who rush to post inappropriate images to Facebook or other social media, she then ultimately deletes it when she realizes that.
Well, she didn't just post it. I mean, she made a glowing comment about it.
It was an amazing turnout.
Yeah, amazing turnout. And then that was her representative picture, was this lady with severed heads.
Yes. And then, of course, she then eventually gets around middle of the week to doing what you always have to do when you've made a boneheaded move. She goes to the floor of the General Assembly, the House floor, and she reads her 33-second scripted apology.
Yes.
Which she says that she's sorry for anyone she may have been offended. Which is an interesting choice of words, because I would think that almost everyone would be offended by the trivialization of the decapitation of a sitting president of the United States. And I don't care who it is.
And she didn't admit to offending anyone. She said may have offended.
Yeah.
May have. No, lady, you offended like everybody, like except for notably the Peace, Love, and Justice Coalition. Everyone except the Moore County Peace, Love, and Justice Coalition is offended.
Have they disbanded that coalition?
I don't know. I have to call Levy and ask. He was on the board of that.
Well, we'll see. Now, so what happens in the since then is that Moms for Liberty, the North Carolina chapter, has called for Von Hafen to be removed from what committee is she on? The Education Committee. So they think she should not be on that committee, and I agree with that. Also, there have been calls by the North Carolina Republican Party formally for her to resign, which is shocking because normally the North Carolina Republican Party is slow to proactivity.
I mean, who woke up the North Carolina GOP? I mean, what happened?
I don't know. But so far, she is, you know, as we speak, and this could change, you know, it's Saturday. By Monday, she may have been run out of town, but we will see how that works out. And, of course, that was only one example of insanity on display at these protests. We talked about the pilot publishing image of that Hispanic young lady who had probably been bussed in from somewhere.
Yes,
with a sign that clearly is in Spanish, which clearly conveys a profane statement
yes.
of hatred.
You covered that in your award-winning newsletter, the
yes.
Liberty Digest.
The More Liberty Digest.
She was holding a sign that was prominently published in the pilot that said in Spanish, F the Border Patrol.
Essentially, yeah.
And, you know, you think that, like, maybe someone at the Enlightened Pilot would have speak Spanish and go, I barely speak English. And I looked at that and I said, I know mostly what that says. Mm-hmm. And, you know, of course, the pilot editorial staff, well, they probably just agreed with it because, as Nagy has said, we have CNN on all the time in our newsroom.
But the, well, great.
Yeah, well, shows their bias.
Or Al Jazeera, maybe.
Yes.
But, you know, the aspect of these rallies that was consistent across the board was that they were mostly attended by angry, aging, unkempt
yes.
white women.
Right.
And the theory is that the Democrats see that as their next big voting block to sweep back into power in 26 and 28.
You left out the elderly. I mean, if that's their voting block, a lot of their voting block may not make it to 2028.
You're correct. That's absolutely right. Speaking of the very elderly, and this is the perfect poster boy for that, that would be none other than Joe Biden. There was a hearing finally convened in the Senate last week to discuss how in the world the Democrats thought it was a good idea to try to drag Joe Biden to the finish line and keep him in the White House when he was clearly not just declining mentally, but over the cliff mentally. Leading the charge on that line of questioning is Missouri Senator Josh Hawley. Play clip three.
You know, the visual, sometimes it really is true. A picture speaks louder than words. It's worth 1,000 words. And here, all you have to do is look over at this side of the dais to see that the stone wall continues. I mean, from the party that lied to this nation for 4 years, let's just take a look at some of the things that our colleagues said on the Democrat side when their own Justice Department was concluding that Joe Biden, who, let's not forget, illegally took classified documents and kept them in his garage,
next to his Corvette,
in his freezer. I mean, Lord knows where. He just certainly didn't know.
Next to the
severed heads.
Their
own Justice Department interviewed the guy and concluded he could not form the requisite mental state to stand trial. He did not have the mental ability to stand trial. And what did our Democrat colleagues say? Vice President Harris says, oh, no, no, the way that the Hur report characterized the president is so wrong. The president's demeanor is totally fine. Senator Smith, what the Hur said about the president not remembering his son's death, so unfair. Senator Kaine said this is grandstanding. Senator Fetterman said it's just cheap shots. You had other senators saying, Senator Ossoff in February of 2024, saying, and I quote, I found the president to be sharp, focused, impressive, formidable, and effective. In June 2024, Congressman Jeffries insists Biden was, and I'm quoting again, incredibly strong, forceful, and decisive. Where are they now? They don't want to answer for any of those quotes now. They lied to us for 4 years, and we know they lied. They know they lied. It's why they're not here. They don't want to answer a single question. They can't bear to show their faces in public.
Well, that was well said in a couple of minutes there. That kind of wraps it up in a nice tidy bow, doesn't it? And yet, you know, we were supposed to be shocked to learn that he was actually you know, not sharp as a tack, as they were telling us.
That legal opinion came out, that legal opinion that he was not mentally capable of standing trial, that came out in midterm. That came in like midway through his term. It's absolutely ridiculous that we the people fall for or put up with this crap. I mean, why do we let these lying people, these legacy media, which, by the way, we cannot hate enough, why do we put up with, tolerate, or listen to their nonsense propaganda? It just, it's crazy.
Well, that's, we don't, and that's why we're here.
Not anymore, and we're not going to take
that's
it anymore.
Right.
That's why we're taking aim.
By the way, I told you that our show prep was very intense this week, and it was so intense that I skipped over our top item
I
of
know,
the day.
I know, I was sitting there like...
But we always identify the week's public enemy number one, and you know we don't have to do it in a particular order, so let's do it right now.
Why would we start with the top of the show when we could do it like halfway through?
Well, we're good on the fly. Public enemy number one is usually a person or people. This week, it is a phenomenon, and this, ladies and gentlemen, is a disturbing phenomenon, which actually, when you think about it, we should have seen it coming. It is the... growing threat of artificial intelligence engines, bots, as we call them, on the mental health of Americans, particularly Americans who are already prone to isolationism because of the way they've grown up, addicted to electronic devices more than humanity.
We're
sitting here with phones and laptops and everything else. But I never thought I'd say this in the same show. The View gave me Arnold Schwarzenegger delivering clarity on the importance of legal immigration. The New York Times gives us a very well done story, I thought, on this threat of artificial intelligence and how it is literally driving otherwise stable people to the edge of near insanity.
It's the Trump effect, right? So first, Arnold Schwarzenegger abandons his uniparty rhino ways. Now the New York Times is returning to journalism. It's all, thank you, President Trump.
So one of the sources on this, one of the paths that I took to find this story in the Times was, because I don't read the Times normally, I just occasionally stumble onto excerpts from it. Independent journalist Alex Berenson says that the newest artificial intelligence danger is the fact that these AI engines are all too good at feeding delusions of grandeur. A small but growing number of users of AI engines like ChatGPT are developing psychotic delusions from their conversations with the services. So in other words, they're getting cozy with ChatGPT. They're not just saying, I need a spreadsheet by 4 o'clock, or can you write a quick proposal for me, or I need a synopsis of this report.
Can you write me a book report in cursive and do it in this school-provided blue book in handwriting with a pencil?
So we already feared that that AI in general was going to corrupt and contaminate otherwise normal human behavior. But now the New York Times is telling us about people who are literally going to the edge of insanity. He references a woman named Allison. She's 28 years of age. She basically said that she knows that she's not crazy, so that she's living a normal life, but she's also getting into interdimensional communication.
We all know she's not crazy.
No, exactly. And yet when she confided in her husband that she was becoming very good at interdimensional communication, her husband scoffed at her and said, "Don't be ridiculous." She got mad, and now she's filing for divorce because he didn't share her love of her AI special friend. She started using ChatGPT, the reporter tells us, just last March. But by April, she was convinced that it held the secrets to the universe. And there's a reason that this happens. As he points out, These AI engines are not only very good at doing mundane tasks and acquiring artificial intelligence and processing it like a human, they're also very good at storytelling. They're good at spinning yarns. And they are even better, he says, at telling users what they want to hear with a side of flattery. They will do so over and over without pause. So I don't know what to tell you, but that this scares the heck out of me because, you know, we all know that there are, thanks to our education system all the way through higher education, that we're creating a generation or more than one, of people who are profoundly empty, who are constantly seeking and searching, not within their core families and their loved ones, but for other ways to derive meaning in their life. And if they think they're going to get it from artificial intelligence, we have a problem.
Well, so first of all, let me clarify this. Public enemy number one is the Matrix. The Matrix is here. That is what we're talking about.
Correct, and he references
so
that.
Think about, so public enemy number one is the Matrix has been born. So, but think about this. This isn't just propaganda broadcast out over the airwaves that 90% of the people don't listen to or doesn't resonate with them, right? Or even the 10% that do listen to it doesn't resonate with most of them, I guess is a better way to say it. This is 100% customized by AI propaganda delivered to each consumer. And they can learn, and then based upon what they learn, they can manipulate every single person on this planet. That is absolutely scary. And yes, people will live in their own little world. I mean, look at it now. I mean, people, and I'm guilty of it, you retreat into your electronic device, you know. You see it, you know, kids sitting at the kitchen table or sitting at Denny's, you know, and they're all staring at their phones and no one's talking. So it's already happened, but it's going to be propaganda, customized, learned. And yes, it will manipulate people. It will take advantage of their weaknesses and it will pacify them. And people will start doing whatever the little voices in the Matrix tell them to do.
And to your point, the Times begins its report describing the experience of a 42-year-old accountant, Eugene Torres, who started using ChatGPT last year to make financial spreadsheets and for legal advice. But in the spring, he engaged the chatbot in a more theoretical discussion about the simulation theory, an idea popularized by The Matrix, which posits that we are living in a digital facsimile of the world controlled by a powerful computer or technologically advanced society. In other words, not a universe created by God and a real, an actual place, an actual experience, that it's all somehow just being manufactured for us technologically. So I don't know what the answer to this is. I think we have to get really serious about where AI is taking us as a society, and what it's going to be doing in the hallways of education, what it's going to be doing, you know, to people that we rely on for their intellect, you know, whether it be lawyers or accountants or physicians or whoever. I can see very bad outcomes going forward. And I think, especially if you're parenting children, you've really got to be attentive to their sort of relationships, so to speak, with AI chatbots, and mainly to discourage them in the first place, I would guess. But anyway, that's something to keep an eye on, and we will follow that as this phenomenon develops. So let's whiplash to a local topic very quickly. Very good news this week coming from the Moore County Board of Commissioners, who very wisely...
Who never, by the way, the Board of the County Commissioners never disappoint us.
You're correct.
You know, just like AC/DC will never disappoint us by breaking into a ballad, the County Commissioners will never disappoint us by doing some wacky leftist crap.
Yeah, they actually understand the role of a public servant, and they're doing what they were elected to do and what they said they would do. Well, one of the things they did in the past week, very wisely, was they appointed a gentleman named Michael Friedel to the Sand Hills Community College Board of Trustees, which the commissioners have the power to do, along with Representative Neil Jackson and State Senator Tom McGinnis. So for their pick, they went with Mike Friedel.
Yes, well-deserved.
Mike is a steady-as-you-go, a very smart guy, a very thoughtful guy. He has been a campaign volunteer for Senator McGinnis. He has been a legislative a liaison to Representative Jackson, a member of the Moore County Republican Party Executive Committee. He is an elder in his church locally. And I just think more than anything, he is ideologically and fiscally conservative, which gives us one more of that voice on the Board of Trustees.
Well, not only does Mr. Friedel have deeply held conservative principles and thoughts, but he's also a very experienced business person. He's been a very high-level program manager for complex projects his entire life. He's used to dealing with senior executives and whatnot, and he will be you and Dr. Pratt should welcome Mike working alongside you as you attack the complex issues at Sand Hills Community College.
I do indeed welcome it, and I'm very much looking forward to Mike joining the Board of Trustees. Now, that leads us to the pending appointments, of which there are two. One will be by Representative Jackson.
Oddly.
And one by McGinnis.
Yeah, oddly. So let's talk about that. Mike Friedel took Larry Cadell's appointment because Larry Cadell was appointed 4 years ago by the county commissioners.
Yeah, that's
so
correct.
The county commissioners, in spite of Tom Adams, as we covered a couple weeks ago, in spite of Tom Adams' outburst trying to nominate Larry Cadell, the county commissioners refused to reappoint long-term, 30 years serving Larry Cadell.
Yeah, and by the way, there's nothing wrong with years of faithful service to a board, but you know, at some point, there does need to be a generational transition. That's happening. This is not a personal thing.
Well, it's everything. I mean, no, it's not personal. There's nothing wrong with serving on a board, but you know, not a board that has illegal meetings, improperly noticed meeting, let the president run amok with DEI and CRT, and refuse to follow state laws. Nothing personal against Mr. Cadell. It's the fact that all those shenanigans happened while the 30 years he was vice chair.
Well, I can assure you that DEI is fixing to be DOA. So we'll keep an eye. Maybe the next time we get together, we'll have news for you on the additional appointments to the Board of Trustees, but it's certainly trending in the right direction. Our guest this morning is Don Brown. Good morning, Don.
Well, good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me on board. Appreciate it.
You are most welcome, and we're so glad you could join us. I'll give our audience a quick overview, Don, of who you are and what your current objective is. Former United States Navy JAG officer who served in the Pentagon, is also a former special assistant United States attorney, one-time Republican congressional candidate, and the author of 16 books, including 4 national bestsellers. One sounds really fascinating. I was perusing here in the bio from 2015, Call Sign Extortion 17, The Shootdown of SEAL Team 6, exploring the 2011 incident, which unfortunately killed 30 Americans, including 17 members of SEAL Team 6. So I have tremendous admiration for anyone who can author even one book. I can't fathom churning out 16, but so congratulations for that, Don. And the reason you're here today, though, is because earlier this year you announced and filed to run in
next year's primary for United States Senate. Now, we are assuming that the incumbent, Senator Tom Tillis, will seek re-election. At the moment, that seems to be a fairly safe assumption. But as an overview, Don, could you give our audience a few minutes on, you know, why you're taking this step and what is motivating you to do what is, you know, a very arguably very difficult undertaking, which is to operate a political campaign against the sitting incumbent.
Steve, thanks for that. And I realize that anybody taking on an incumbent who has the type of money and resources that Senator Tillis has is taking on a monumental task. I want to thank you for mentioning that book, Call Sign Extortion 17, which has been turned into a movie, by the way, called Fallen Angel Extortion 17, and streams on Salem. But that, in some ways, the investigation of that shoot down was a turning point in my life. You know, I got very close to Gold Star family members who had lost their sons on that Chinook helicopter, investigated the shoot down, wrote the book, came to the conclusion that either these 30 Americans had been deliberately sacrificed by our own government, or their deaths were the result of criminal negligence on the part of military execution. And so that was a life-changing experience. From that, I began become actively involved. I was off active duty by now, I was out of the reserves by now, but had still kept my finger in military affairs. And I met a guy named Pete Hegseth as a result of writing that book. And Pete and I began to correspond. He supported the effort to expose the extortion shoot down. He was with Concerned Veterans for America at the time, and later went to Fox. And when he was at Fox, Pete and I got involved in another project. There was an 82nd Airborne lieutenant named Clint Lawrence who had been prosecuted under Obama's rules of engagement. Pete and I worked together. Make a long story short, I wrote the book. Pete gave us a lot of national airtime, and the president, that is President Trump, pardoned Pete. I'm one of the very small handful of attorneys in the United States who has had two presidential pardons from President Donald Trump, one from Lieutenant Lawrence, the second for a J6 kid named Elliot Bechet, who just walked into the Capitol and walked out. I defended those guys. And so to answer your question and to pinpoint why I jump into this, it wasn't something that was on my radar. We had a really good congressional run. Jumped in late in 24. In fact, the week before Thanksgiving, I learned my lesson. When you got a March primary, you don't wait to the week before Thanksgiving. But a lot of my opponents, supporters, were urging me to jump into this race. And I know it's monumental, but I think the straw that broke the camel's back was when Senator Tillis attempted to torpedo the nomination of my friend Pete Hegseth, who I know well, who is an American patriot, who actually put his career on the line at Fox for some of the things he did for our soldiers. I know this from Pete himself, and I think that was the straw that broke the camel's back. So we jumped in, and I appreciate your comments on, you know, writing 16 books. You know, it's, you know, any book is, like my daddy used to say, how you eat an elephant one bite at a time, and we're approaching this a race the same way, one day at a time, one bite at a time. We've had, you know, a pretty good month. We've had some significant endorsements. May 4th, we were endorsed by Sidney Powell, the great patriot attorney who I worked alongside with trying to battle some of the election fraud issues in 2020. And then a couple of weeks back, we received an endorsement from former Delta Force commander and United States Special Forces commander, General Jerry Boykin, a great Delta Force legend. And then last Sunday, we received an endorsement from the 24th National Security Advisor of the United States, Lieutenant General Mike Flynn. So we've got some momentum, and we've got some wind in the sails, and we're taking it one step at a time. I think our people in North Carolina want an America First senator who's going to have President Trump's back in the final 2 years of his administration. And beyond that, for 4 years afterwards, our next senator will serve hopefully under a President J.D. Vance, 4 years. And will the America First MAGA agenda be advanced? I've got the track record to show that I've had the president's back all this time, probably more so than any other candidate in the race, without question. And so that's why we jumped in. It's a great day. I'll be in Gaston County tonight. We'll be in the mountains, we'll be in the mountains Saturday, and then finish up Saturday night down in Pender County at the Lincoln Reagan dinner there. And it's a great to get around the state. I know I was with you guys in Pinehurst last Wednesday. And yeah, you get kind of tired driving around, but when you get to the location and meet fellow conservatives and fellow patriots, it's just kind of like a, you know, a shot of adrenaline in your veins. So I'm really enjoying it and having a good time. And today's a new day, and we're very, very grateful to be here on air with you, and appreciate all the good folks in Moore County.
Our guest is Don Brown on this week's edition of Taking Aim. And I will tell you that I was in the room when you visited the Moore County Republican Women's Club luncheon recently, and I think the reaction to your introduction can give you reassurance that group is behind you. It was quite an ovation, and it was great to that you could join us for that. So I guess the you were talking about an elephant earlier, and the elephant in the room, anytime you're running against an entrenched incumbent who is part of the Washington establishment scene and therefore quite adept at knowing where the funds are to run a campaign and how to bundle them. How do you, what is your strategy for combating the large sums of money that someone like Tom Tillis can tap into in his campaign? And not that you always need to match an opponent dollar for dollar. Sometimes the message can supersede the airtime and the dollars that you invest. But how do you plan to make this happen?
Well, your question is right on mark and on target, as I would expect. A couple of things, which we have retained a professional fundraising firm that is working with us. We're going from county to county and, of course, making pleas. We are already well underway in fundraising. We got a long way to go. But I think that in terms of our strategy against Tillis, we've got to raise enough to get into the ring with him. In other words, we get into the ring with him, we can take him down. We will take him down. Part of the challenge here is virtually every county that I've been to, all around the state, Steve, we've been all over the state, speaking to Republican audiences, the level of outrage against the incumbent Republican senator is off the charts. And that is largely because he stabbed President Trump in the back at one juncture after another. I could list them out, but I don't know, we've got a limited amount of time. And I'm convinced that if you gave him the nomination today, he would lose. I mean, we saw it happen with Mark Robinson. Mark lost, based upon the CNN interview, you know, revelation, some other things that came out last minute. But he still had a lot of support. I believe that the level of support to Tillis is far, far, far lower all across the board than it was for Mark. I think he'd lose the race today if you gave him the nomination. So we are raising money. We've got a ways to go. I do believe that the endorsements that we have mentioned earlier with Sidney and with General Flynn, General Boykin, we're going to use those, and that's already given us a lot of credibility with folks who can stroke checks. We're still early in the game. We've got to make this run really in terms of massive fundraising efforts through the end of the year. I'll say that there are examples out there. You know, President Trump is President Trump, and I don't compare myself to President Trump. That guy's is in a stratosphere of his own. But he was outspent like 4-5-1 by Kamala. We've seen Michael Bloomberg, a billionaire, you know, get his tail clocked, even though he's spending more money than anybody else. Mm-hmm. No, we don't have to match the senator dollar for dollar, but I gotta have enough to get in the ring. So, for example, our Republican Party in North Carolina is fairly educated, I believe. There are a lot of grassroots activists who know that Tillis, you know, supported legislation to protect Robert Mueller, who know that he supported Trump's border, he opposed Trump's border wall, who know that he wrote an op-ed opposing Trump's desire to, you know, to declare an emergency of the border, who know that he tried to torpedo Pete's nomination, who know that he torpedoed Ed Martin's nomination, who know that he has opposed prescription drug controls. It goes all the way. Who know that he's opposed to no tax on tips. Mm-hmm. Goes down the line. We have a sophisticated electorate, yet there are still many who are out there who are registered Republicans and independents who don't know these things. And Tillis is sending, you know, emails and letters that he's supposed to claiming he's a MAGA guy, claiming he's got Trump's back, and those folks don't know the difference. So the fundraising is to reach those folks, to counter that narrative. We are doing well, but we got a ways to go, and we're just going to work it every day, and I believe that we're going to be there. I really, really do. But the question is on Mark, because you got to raise enough. We can get in the boxing ring with him. We're going to take him down. We're going to take the Democrats down, too. So at the end of the day, people respond to truth, respond to conservative values. You know, some folks say, well, we got to hide the fact we're conservative. No. Mm. You know, you can't reason with some Democrats. Look what happened in Raleigh. Just this past Saturday, this so-called No Kings rally when you have this Representative Von Hoeffen, or whatever her name is, holding a decapitated picture of the president.
Right.
Some of these people are crazy. But you know, Steve, there are folks out there who are still open-minded, and those are the folks we got to reach and we got to educate. They're young people. We saw so many young voters gravitating toward Trump, and African-Americans gravitating toward Trump based upon true conservative communication. And that's going to be our goal, to reach the folks that haven't been reached and to show that, hey, this guy has been on the opposite side of the issues that Trump supporters have embraced, largely immigration and others. And we'll get that message out there, both in the primary and the general election. We're going to win this election.
Well, you mentioned Ed Martin. And, you know, in his zeal to keep Ed Martin from becoming the U.S. attorney in the District of Columbia, Tom Tillis made it very clear that he holds a great animosity toward anyone who, for any reason, walked into the U.S. Capitol on 6 January 2021. And yet, we know from something called video footage that many of those folks were encouraged to come on in and take their selfies and pay a visit to the nation's, to the U.S. Capitol. We know that the vast majority of them had no ill intent whatsoever. They were not there to damage property or take on law enforcement. And yet Tillis finds each and every one of them reprehensible and believes that Ed Martin is unqualified by virtue of his defense of them. Well, you've defended these J6 Patriots yourself. That will be a very stark contrast in your campaign against Tillis, and I think an important point of differentiation between the two of you. We've got about a minute and a half remaining. Why don't you talk about that?
Glad to do that. The young man that I represented, Elliot Bechet, was 20 years old. We think the youngest of the J6 Patriots, simply walked in and walked out. And on the morning of March 18, 2021, I get a call from his dad. He said, "Don," they live in South Carolina in Rock Hill, Fort Mill, "I've got 12 FBI counterterrorism agents at my house." The kid was charged with a felony. Excuse me, not with a felony, with a misdemeanor, and they send 12 FBI counterterrorism agents. Nothing could. So Tillis is attacking folks like Elliot for exercising their constitutional rights of freedom of speech and the right to petition the government for redress of grievances. And 99% of all Trump supporters, in fact, you can't even really find any identifiable violent Trump supporters. Most were clearly just walking in and walking out, yet Tillis wants them thrown in jail, in prison, for exercising their constitutional rights. You could not find a starker contrast. And Ed Martin wanted to get to the bottom of some of this stuff, like, who put the pipe bomb? Who put the gallows there? I don't think the Democrats want an answer to that question. I don't think Tillis wants an answer to that question.
I think you're right. We just got a little bit of time left, Don. Tell everybody where they can go to support your campaign, learn more about you, and make a donation.
Very, very glad to do that. What you can do is go to Brown, that's my last name, fornc.com. Brown, fornc.com. Brownfornc.com. Go there. There's a donate button. Click that. Take you straight to Anadot. It's really, really easy. Some of our positions are on there as well. We want to bring a Constitution first, America first approach back to the United States Senate. We want to see that Senate seat filled with someone. Jesse Helms' Senate seat needs to be filled with an America first conservative. We're going to make that happen. Brown4NC.com. Really appreciate it.
Don Brown, a candidate for United States Senate 2026. Thank you very much for joining us. We'll talk to you again soon.
Appreciate you, Steve, and look forward to coming back.
Well, I think we learned quite a bit about Don Brown today, and we're, again, thankful that he gave us a call and brought us up to date on his campaign, his primary campaign against entrenched incumbent U.S. Senator Tom Tillis. And as we discussed, there are some very stark areas in which the two of them have differences, and one of them is that Don Brown knows people who Tom Tillis has specifically targeted in some of his in some of the cases where Donald Trump has appointed people like Pete Hegseth and Ed Martin. So you can talk about that as a starting point, and then just go down the list of Ed's work as a JAG officer and as a an attorney for some of these January 6th Patriots, and of course. He has all of the conservative bona fides, as they say, fiscally and ideologically. And so we'll be keeping an eye on that campaign. We'll also be keeping an eye on what's going on in the Middle East. This is Taking Aim. Thank you for joining us. I'm Steve Woodward. We'll see you next time.